professional clapper, Jay Master.
Yes, yes. Yeah,
this guy's clapped before.
Guys, we're back for another Pit Stop episode. So welcome back, Jordan. What's up, dude?
How you doing, Nick?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Think we got a good one today.
This is something that, you know, we find ourselves talking about again between us and other designers so frequently that it just seemed crazy not to like try to bring it into the podcast form, right?
Yeah. And before we reveal the topic, let's introduce our buddy, Jay Master. Jay, what's up, bud?
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good, man. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, glad to be here. Yeah. Looking forward to the conversation.
Longtime admirer, longtime Instagram friend, now on our podcast. So we're excited to have you here.
Likewise, ready to rock it.
Good, good. Tell our listeners just a little bit about you, your Instagram handle, where they can find you too, just so they know a little bit about your background before we get into our topic.
Sure. Well, my Instagram handle is Live Design. I've been designing for, probably 15, 20 years. Been at the game a long time. And Instagram is sort of, you know, it's been an interesting place where I've got to meet people like you guys and really dive into a design community that wasn't as accessible before. So that's been a great thing.
Yeah.
You know, I specialize in branding, packaging, sort of a jack of all trades.
It's funny. I think
that's freelance creative, right? Like, I feel like that's sort of the recipe.
I think our commonality is how I think we all kind of know each other really too, because we're in the same boat a lot, you know, with a lot of the similar products, the similar clients, you know, that those one people show kind of deal that try to make it look like there's nine of us.
right.
The Royal Wees. Yeah,
exactly. But I'm so glad we got you, because we did kind of have a pre-call and we were talking about this idea of kind of what it takes to balance this ego of ours as creatives, you know, we had such a good conversation that we put it on hold because we wanted to kind of capture a little bit more about it now. And I'd say our objective here is to really kind of help younger creatives and people that are kind of still, even like people like us, because we still battle with it all the time. How do we handle those insecurities as a commercial artist and the vulnerability of like social media and what truly defines you should really be kind of front and center when it comes to how we feel, you know? And it's such a fun topic because it's vulnerable and it's good, but I think it also can help us and everybody else listening, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you hear it a lot with designers, right? It's always sort of like those difficult clients, or you're going through some sort of creative burnouts, frustrations with projects, imposter syndrome, whatever those pressures and difficulties can be. But I think, and sort of the overarching theme of this episode, I think, is really try to understand like the designer's ego and like how to tackle that, right? Like, our egos are fragile and easily triggered. And so, like, of course, it's considered a bad thing, right? Having an ego or being egotistical. And I would agree with that to an extent, but I just think like a more helpful frame might be, how do we understand our ego a little better? And is it possible to like repurpose the problems into potentials, maybe find benefits? How can we turn it into a tool? And I think the first part is probably just addressing the designer ego and really when that comes into play, how that comes into play. And take that big step back and try to see it from top down.
Yeah. And like in some of the stuff we were looking at, this idea that when Jordan and I were talking offline too, it was like there is a certain part of the ego that is healthy, you know, and then there's a lot that is unhealthy. So again, it's like, how are you balancing it to use it to your advantage when you need to, but then also identifying it when it's probably pretty dangerous sometimes too, you know, or detrimental.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's that line of confidence, right? Confidence and ego, right? Being confident in what you do is valuable. You have to be confident. You have to believe that you can do anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Because if you're not, like, how that confidence level is so, if you, without that, I can see how that has kept people from taking chances and taking risks and maybe going after something bigger and better than they're used to, you know? There are those moments where maybe that bit of confidence, and call it a bit of ego or not, are really valuable, and we'll dive into that for sure. What's that first area here is identifying our ego and maybe like when it comes into play negatively. Like, what are some of the triggers you guys can think of, and when it became clear to you that maybe it was that level of an insecurity or something that, or I'm not good enough, where it took its toll?
Well, I think for me, probably, you know, one thing that comes to mind is just sort of when you're in a project and you're so married to an idea that you let yourself get in the way of what you're trying to accomplish from the client perspective, right? Yeah. That's when the ego starts to talk to you and say, you know, like you want this idea so badly, this is your baby, but at the same time, it's not, right?
Exactly.
It's their baby. You're merely trying to just assist them along their journey, right? To help them communicate their goals. So if you can learn to step back from that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
That is a really good point. And I think it's also like, it's important. I'd like to try to take a step back, like almost even further, and say, like, why are we prone to getting triggered or triggering our egos in the first place? Because I do think as freelance designers, we're engaging in like a very different line of work. And it not only requires like an understanding of design and marketing and everything that comes with that, but it requires like a high level of communication and trust and vulnerability. And I think it's like those latter few that get us into trouble, right? Because like half of our time is working alongside the client. Like we're building a genuine relationship, which is riddled with like the same emotional discourses and difficulties as any other relationship. But the difference is like there's a weird power dynamic between us, the designer, and the client. And, you know, I think we can even unpack that with like, and I'm curious what you guys think with our line of work, like who's in control? Is it the designer or the client? And I know there's situations for both, but, you know, like bottom line, like it is interesting to think like who is actually in control of that relationship.
You're right. And then maybe that when the power struggle feels that's out of your court is where your ego might boost.
Yeah.
Right. And to take control or to, gosh, you know, it's that my way or the highway kind of thing. And,
sure.
And you're right. Who is in control? And you even mentioned the other day that even maybe it's not even you or the client. It's the consumer at hand here for whatever you're dealing with. You know, well,
that's sort of, in my opinion, like that's the key right there. And I think if you can get to that place, I think things start to get a little bit more easy for you, right? Like less triggering. Because I think there is an argument for like, yes, the client likely owns the work, fuels the project, has like the ultimate say at the end of the day. But you as a designer, well, you're the expert, you're producing the work, you're bringing value to the client. And so it's that sort of strange dichotomy that can be problematic, right? Mm-hmm. Like having the expert not being the same person that has the final say. And when I was starting off, like this got my way a lot when I was, you know, those first few go rounds as a freelancer, and it still does. Like I still struggle with it from time to time for sure.
Yeah.
But it's been able, like, since I took that large step back and understand what's triggering me, it's like the same thing. I realized the person in control is the customer, like both the client and me should be bowing to the king, which is the customer. Right. Like we're the leader. I think the client's like the beneficiary. Customer's king.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. You know, and I think one of the things I sort of learned along the way is that to try to bake that into the process at the beginning.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You have well conversations said. At the very beginning about the expectations of what they're after, what their customer's expectations are, most importantly. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the cornerstone.
And then if you can have an open conversation with the client about that, and you know, that's not always going to happen because sometimes they just don't know.
Yeah.
Yes. Right?
Give them an example. Like I'm assuming it's both verbal and written, but maybe give the listeners a bit of an insight how you would do that.
All right. Well, typically when I start a project, a branding project, what I do is, you know, I sort of have a discovery call. Call them, talk to them. Try to figure out where they're coming from a personal perspective, mm-hmm. right? Also from a business perspective and sort of just try to figure out the map in my head of where it needs to go. And then I have a separate questionnaire, that sort of brand personality questionnaire. It gets into an audit and sort of really gets into the nitty gritty and makes them ask themselves questions.
Yes. Mm. And probably ones they've never been asked before.
Correct. And most of the time, and usually what ends up happening after that is either you can have several things. One, they're completely confused by it. They don't know how to answer any of it.
Or, and you do it for them.
right. Which is okay too. Or you get, they're really insightful about it and they really take the time to think about it and fill it out. And, you know, those end up being fantastic clients usually.
Yeah. That's the first good sign. You know, and so through this process, are you feeling that it's helping define those roles of who we're playing at the very beginning?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. As with any relationship, you know, you sort of have to set, we all have expectations of each other, right? You know, and if you can sort of set those expectations or more importantly, understand those expectations.
Yeah.
Right. That is when you can understand where the other person is coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really true. What other things, like in your professional past, guys, and you know, maybe that where you saw it and you went, wow, I can't believe I did that. Like, I can't believe I took that path or thought that path or that idea. And the ego was going back to that, the negative side or the unhealthy side.
I mean,
you mean like every day?
Young designer, yeah, man. Like, and I still, like, it's still a struggle, right? Like, ultimately, I think the biggest difference, you know, me now versus maybe me a number of years ago starting off is like, I had an ego without an understanding, and I was like kind of blindly confident.
Yeah.
And, but ultimately, like, I think the biggest thing that triggered me was like, it was way too close to the work. It was way too personalized for me. Like, I wasn't taking myself out of the work, right? Because your ego, it's you. It's your self-esteem. It's personal. It's your point of view. It's your values, your beliefs. Like, as designers, we're constantly putting ourselves out there. And it's always a vulnerable feeling when you put yourself out there.
Yeah.
But I think that's the wrong approach, because I think sometimes people confuse ego with passion. And because your design work shouldn't be a showcase of you. It should be a reflection of like the project goals, and it should be built with the customer in mind, not us, you know, but not even the client. And so we're starting to grasp like that idea of when I take myself out of this work I've done, there's less pressure and less pressure, you know, to prove who I am as a designer and you know what I mean? Like it gave me a healthier perspective, made it easier to look at like my work more honestly. And it's, again, it's not a reflection of who I am. And so I think that was like stage one, because once I got to that place of like, this design is, again, it's not my focus, my point of view, it's built on goals and the customer's, you know, relationship.
Yeah.
That was that sort of moment, because before that I was triggering all the time, man.
Oh,
it was a tough, you know, it was a tough go. I think that was like sort of that stage one for me.
Jay, what about you?
Yeah. You know, I agree with that. You know, I was kind of thinking about, I think it was Massimo Vanelli had this line about that your style is inherent in what you do. So regardless of what you do as a designer, we all have this sort of style about how we go about our artwork.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you sort of realize that, okay, whatever I'm doing, you know, I'm going to have my fingerprint on it.
Yeah.
Right. But then just moving forward, as you mentioned, with the goals, and really, you know, I think when I realized, and I don't know exactly when that was, but when I realized that you have these goals for the clients and this is your objectives, this is what it is all about.
That's the measurement.
That is the measurement.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's not about whether this thing wins an award or I can stick it in my portfolio. That stuff to me, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, accolades, all that stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. Because that doesn't mean success to the client.
Yes.
Right. That doesn't equate to them selling more beers off the shelves or
referring you to the
whatever
next guy,
it may be.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Which sort of brings back like the client is the beneficiary in this relationship. Like, we should be working to benefit them for the customer. It's like a weird kind of thing, but like that is the relationship.
Yeah. You're right.
Us as the experts, we're benefiting the client in favor of the customer. which is hard. It's a weird dynamic.
If you put that shift it on is. You, that like I'm the one that reaps the reward after this thing, it's such a wrong perspective in so many ways. You know, it's like, but here we are in a world where there's everything we participate in is calculated by numbers and response and by popularity. And yet we're playing in that game because let's face it, I think we all three put it out there for the sake of just validation. Here's what we do. So if someone does look us up, we could see there's a breadth of great work and all that, but it's tied into all those other things that mess with you and specifically young designers. When I see kids freak out over something not doing well online or comparing themselves to others, God, that ego, we all still have it. It's like, just how have we controlled it? You know, and those are still the triggers for me. I don't think I was ever a competitive designer until we had those methods to compare, because all we had were publications and things that we got to see this stuff, but there was no tangible connection to that. We were still in our own world. And now, you know, we compare, you know, the whole compare yourself to the Joneses meant you just compared yourself to the two or three people next to you. Now we compare ourselves to the world. And that's such a dangerous thing, you know, and you know, we'll get into the advice parts later, but I think that's kind of the key to think about is like, how do we eliminate that now and help out people to kind of like not see that that's the important thing. The other things define success, not numbers, hearts, and all that other crap.
Well, I think like just starting off though, you know, and I fell snare to that, you know, for sure, right? Mm-hmm. Like just comparing myself and feeling that imposter syndrome or whatever that is. And it was just simply like I didn't experience other success. My successes at that time having few clients and not a lot of work and getting into it and not having like that self-confidence that comes with experience. It's like, well, my success is felt through Instagram likes or whatever it was. Like that's what I measured success, because that was really that like those early returns I was getting as that young designer. And so now, having like seen, you know, worked with a number of clients and seen work on the shelves and like seen actual like rebrand successes and seen numbers, and like I measure my success a little differently, right? My image success now, and I assume you guys are in the same boat, it's like when my project succeeds for the client, I did my job. That's what I got paid to do. And that's what I'm, as designers, we're doing, you know? We're creating we're fixing business problems in the broadest sense. So I think it was really just like redefining what success is, but I really think that only comes with once you experience, you know, different forms of it.
Oh, you got to get that. And when you see a young designer get that first feel and emotion of something done successfully, that's a light up more than anything else you're going to get as far as social media accolades. You know what I mean? It's like that when they see something on the shelf or they see something actually come to reality in their first few years, that's think of that as your goal. And because you've done something so well and the client kills it. Like you talk a lot, Jordan, about like having that, those conversations with your clients, like how well did this do? I want to know results. Yes. And when you can do that with your client, and you're not, you don't have to share like specific numbers, but if you could share percentages and things that have done better, those are great things to put in your case study, you know, along the lines of how things have performed. Let that be a better gauge to look at for success.
Yeah. Right? Get those testimonies, man. Those things are, I find, worth a lot more, than you would think. Right.
Sure.
Like, and also, yeah, you're right, where like I think checking back in with a client after maybe a couple months to see how that work is doing is invaluable to not only you, but also the client. Like, I think, again, our job is we're building relationships with people. I don't ever want to do a one and done unless the project is like an anomaly of a bad client. Like, fine. But for the most part, like, I want retainer work. And if I get along with a client and we work well together, I want to make that ongoing for as long as possible. Like, that's my security. And so our job as designers and freelance, like our job is to earn the client's trust, you know? And when I started off, again, another trigger, it's like, I just assumed that any client trusted me implicitly, no matter, you know, from the beginning, which I think that's a pretty, you know, detrimental mindset to start things off with. Or like once a contract is signed, it's like it's smooth sailing. But it's a road that needs constant paving, like any relationship. And as the leaders and experts in this, it's our job to make sure we're initiating and building that trust throughout, you know, pre, you know, during and post project.
Absolutely. Well, it's about customer service, right? Like you just talked about that check in, right? Is a step of customer service. Yeah. Now, I waited on tables for 5-6 years, you know, when I first going to college, et cetera.
Best experience ever.
Best experience. No, seriously.
Talk about like the ego setback and like understanding.
Yeah. You know, like I worked at a really busy restaurant. And so we're just churning people through all the time. And the amount of people that you have to deal with in a short time span who are hungry, who are angry, you know, happy, et cetera. You know, you learn to deal with all these people, but you learn that, okay, I have these steps of going back, checking in, making sure they're okay.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And just sort of these simple things, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think we are in the service industry, whether, you know, it's easy or not to admit that. Like, and again, I think we'd all agree, like most of our work, at least for me especially, it's like I'm contacting clients and I'm emailing and I'm taking calls. Like I'm doing the admin relationship building stuff, you know, 70% to my 30% really designing.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes, especially freelance, it's like it takes a ton of sort of that communicative nonstop discussions and reach outs and
oh, it's keeping and the fire alive,
points of contact,
everything, right? It will die out so quickly the minute you drop that, and it's a lot to add to your table. You know, I know how busy you guys are, and I see the work and everything. It's like keeping all that alive is kind of the whole future. You know, it's like, so I think too, like what's nice about that is maybe that's a good balance because it takes our mind off of the creativity and the objectivity of what we do. And is it good? Is it not? But if you know you're a good client relations person, then there's a bit of confidence right there that could boost up your feeling, you know, and maybe this is a good segue because I think we have a fun part here. And this is like, when has your ego helped you? When has it been healthy? When it has helped you in a positive way? Because like we said earlier, you can't just eliminate it completely. It is a secret weapon sometimes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think it goes back to that confidence thing, right? You 100%. Know, like when a client comes to me and says, I have a new project and let's just call it a beer can project, right? Like I know I can execute on beer cans all day long.
Yeah.
Right? Like I love doing it. But even if it's something that outside of that realm, right? And something that's not necessarily in my comfort zone.
You stole the words out of my mouth, Jay. God dang it.
Is that, you know, you take the confidence from what you know already and apply it to other areas.
Totally.
Right? The way I see it is that we as designers have an arsenal of tools, right? Whether that's how we illustrate, how we work with typography, you know, the different effects that we can do, all these sorts of things. And we have these tools that we use, but we have to manipulate them to work in other areas, right? And which is how you keep growing as a designer as well.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
100%.
It's always that, especially early on, like, and I still do it all the time, where like I'll just fake until I make it. And once I go through that, it's something that I am, you know, able to maybe even offer. Like I look at building a website, or I look at photography, all these things that like I took on projects without, you know, as sort of like, yeah, I can handle that. And then I had to figure it out. And now it's something that I feel, you know, proficient in some regard, where I can even like offer that to the client later on down the road.
Yeah. Yeah. You nailed it by saying like a industry that you might not have any experience in, and a client comes to you and goes, oh, love your food and beverage stuff, but you know, I'm a financials, you know, operation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you know anyone in that zone? And you kind of got to, it's a healthy spot to say, let me educate you, and saying like, what I have, like you said, is this arsenal, and it could work. It's, if you know branding, you can brand the most serious company and the most humorous company and anything in between, you know, or and any Absolutely. Industry, because we have, and then you get to kind of shine and maybe show off a little bit your process. The only time I've had those two or three that didn't feel like I was the right fit for them, I did share a little bit of maybe like a discovery deck from a previous client, and it was in a, and I made sure it was in a completely opposite 180 kind of realm that they are. and that kind of got them thinking, whoa, this is we're going to go through this process. Like now I see it. So you weren't bragging, you weren't conceited. You were basically being better, and you were showing that one step up to prove yourself.
Yeah, no, and you hit it, showing different decks, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, we all have sort of a breadth of work. You've been at it a while. And when you don't have a breadth of decks that you can show, you know, that's a good question, because at that stage, like when you're a young designer, you're like, okay, well, how do I get that beer job that I've always wanted, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's sort of, you know, getting in, it's sort of a tangent on it, but, you know, going in and doing these side projects, personal projects that can then lead you to those places.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, to go back to what you're talking about, having the sort of breadth of the decks, is that, you know, there was one of my design teachers was always adamant about having two or three different things that are completely different that you can show variety to the client.
Yes.
Right. Say, look, I can do it from here and I can do it from here. Right. Let's talk about where we're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a great way to look at it. You know, yeah. I'm glad you brought up the young designer that might not have that experience to use to use that ego in the positive way. And I think you're right. Like I think the passion projects and the thing you can do, that's maybe a little of you saying like, well, screw it. If I'm not getting that job, I'm not getting projects in that zone, I'm going to build that up and put it in my portfolio and show that I can do it. And even self-initiated, sometimes I would look at that as even more important and more substantial in a young designer if they did it themselves.
Absolutely. Yeah, right? I still do self-initiated mm-hmm. projects all the
yeah,
time.
Yeah, you do, man. Sure. I in addition to the 18 brands you create a week, you still put in passion projects, don't you?
I do. Well, you know, I try to do something. You know, I have a thing where I do a 30-minute warm-up every single day. I don't post it all the time.
Good.
Right? But I wake up after I drop off my kid from school, before I start all my emails, everything.
Good,
I come
man.
In and I do it 30 minutes. And sometimes it's structured. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes I just sketch for 30 minutes.
Great.
Right? You know, but I do find when it's structured, and so, you know, whether it's doing a logo or packaging project, whatever it is, the more constraints you can give yourself, the better.
That's great, dude. Like that's just such a good lesson I think everyone can learn from, regardless of where you're at. You know, what risks have you guys taken in thanks to maybe a healthy ego giving you that boost to say, you know, something to the next level, like talking about you're happy here. This is the goal. How did you get there and how did you do it?
I mean, I think you have to have a quote unquote healthy ego in order to even take that first plunge into like a freelance, right? Like you have to have that one drive, which I think mm-hmm. for me stems from my ego, which stems from like my confidence. So I think you have to be pretty confident to say, I don't need to work for anyone else. Like I can do it myself. Starting there, mm-hmm. that's your ego driving that, which I think can be healthy. And also like, it's, you know, my ego helps me sell, you know, to clients when like I have to either put an RFP or like, you know, pitch or whatever it is. It's like, well, my ego is kind of taking over, right? Like I let my ego take over when I feel I'm in that like expert position. The difference is like, mm-hmm. I want to come at it like more calmly, less aggressive, and more in a place of like either guidance, right? I let my ego guide me and also guide the relationship with the client if I need mm-hmm. to educate them on something, or you know, there's miscommunication or something like that. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, I think I don't know how you can kind of do this line of work without having some sort of ego. I'm not sure mm-hmm. if it's really possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You know, and again, it's the confidence thing, because to me, the confidence is part of the ego, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's the negative sides of the ego. Like, I don't know about you guys, if you played sports growing up or not, but, you know, I played baseball and I played basketball, and I was always confident that when I go out onto the court, I can do what I need to do because I've been practicing at it. I've been pulling up with my jumpers 100 times before I even got to the scenario, right? And so it's the same thing with design and with clients, is that if you know that you can do it, you can just pull up and you can just do it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's confidence. And that's not ego saying, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to annihilate you and, you know, you're going to go my way or the highway, right?
Yeah.
It's a whole different thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Inigo is literally defined as like self-esteem, right? Or self-importance, which is confidence. And again, confidence isn't a bad thing. I think it can be very beneficial. It's just being overly anything, overly confident, egotistical, mm-hmm. to the point of like, I'm putting myself so much into this that I'm not seeing a bigger picture. And that kind of ties back before. It's like, you got to remove yourself to an extent and let the healthier side of your ego sort of, you know, guide that relationship,
yeah,
or whatever it is that you're doing.
Absolutely. Like,
try to identify, yeah. But that takes work. I mean, that took me messing up and making a fool of myself, or like losing relationships, or not doing the best work, just because I wasn't able to identify how my ego was in check in that circumstance, you know?
Yeah, yeah. When you kind of understand that it's okay to fail sometimes, and that's sure. And you can even like be lighthearted about it, and you know, almost be like, be okay with that. Like, that's just accept that that's going to happen. That has allowed me to maybe take that risk in something that maybe I didn't have the confidence in. You know, it's one thing to come in there and say like, you know branding. So if you're this brand, I can still do you. No problem. We're good. But if it's something that's maybe out of my typical scope, what's the worst that can happen? Maybe just a no at one point, because until you know, I can say that confidently that anything that I've risked and they got, and I got a yes back, it worked out. It worked out fine.
Yeah.
You know, cause another thing you can do is be okay with bringing in other people, be okay that it's, don't put the spotlight just on you. That little ego boost got you there, but now, you know, bring in a team, bring in that cavalry that's going to help you do it. So as long as
I was just going to get to that, Nick,
right. Yeah. As long as you're okay with one, the fact that it could just, what's the worst that could happen? Maybe it's just going to be a no. Even if it does fail, like having one or two of those in our back pocket has probably helped me out more than any success, like ever.
100%.
Well, think about it in this context. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, failure is so important to success.
Yeah.
You don't succeed without failing.
Yeah.
Like when I'm doing a logo, I don't know how many logos I make, 100 logos. Mm-hmm. 99 of those fail.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So you're going to have one succeed.
I call them rejects, but I agree.
Reject your fails, whatever.
You're so right, dude. It's black or white. Yes or no, right? Did it make it or not?
Right.
Yeah.
And failing is just that path to success, mm-hmm. right? And one failure does not mean in the very end that the whole thing failed.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course not. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it's so easy, and especially with social media, getting into it, right? Mm-hmm. Is having that one failure, oh, this post didn't do good. Right? Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Who cares? Move on.
And it was the one you spent so much time on.
Right. Keep going. Right? Are, yeah. That's hard for young designers. You know, I get it.
And then that random dumb one you put out is the winner. Like, so
right.
At a certain point, it's that whole rule of, you know, what's in my control and what's out of my control, and knowing the difference. And I think there's those things that is the more open you are to try new things. Take a risk, learn from others, right? Like, kind of understand that failure is going to happen and it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. You'll take that risk. I think there's advantages too to being a younger designer now, where you could take a risk of maybe even applying for a job or something much simpler than you could 20 years ago, right? Or now that it's things are a click away. So use that as an advantage, I think, sometimes to say like, wow, I could shoot for something where I wouldn't have. What's the worst that could happen, right?
Yeah. Yeah, which again,
absolutely.
That takes some ego and some confidence to be, mm-hmm. like, you know, I'm going to go for this because I think I'm the best person for this. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, that level mm-hmm. of confidence is so crucial.
Yes.
You have to have that. You have to be able to take the risk, and you can't take a risk unless you don't believe you can do it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, healthy ego is like that right there, and with a bow around it. For
you know,
sure.
And your ego can also boost and help the soft skills as well as the hard ones, right? Like, so your talent, your book, your creative process obviously is fantastic. I always say like that gets you in the door, but what keeps you there is your camaraderie, your reputation, how you deal with people, your communication skills, whatever. So sometimes I've seen very sick students who are 1 or 2 years out of school land jobs more from the success of their personality and that. So let's say maybe the work isn't there and the experience level isn't what it does enough to boost your confidence or your ego. Let you as a person also be that, because in an interview, that's where you're shining. I mean, let's face it. That's that you're hiring a person. You're not hiring a book, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. Yeah. And we've seen, I'm sure we've all come across those people that you're like, how are you still in business? Like you have no personality. You're not willing to work with others or compromise. But when you have that as a young designer, I think you're more welcome into a culture because let's face it. They don't want to make a mistake in hiring someone that costs them a lot of money.
Yeah, man. It's your ability to, again, build the relationship and your yep. ability to communicate. And those are just like social things that, you know, yeah. I can get you ahead in life throughout. But especially in this line of work, because, again, it's mostly that. It's less mm-hmm. design than I think people realize. You know, one man band's like, well, that means you're doing everything. Design is a sliver of everything that we're doing. And yeah. I say the bulk of it is really it's building that relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What about, this is another fun spot, but let's talk about when we've identified or we've seen the ego kind of take over in either a client or just someone else you're working with. I mean, it doesn't have to be particularly that, you know. What were those things that you saw or like, it's a battle too, because I hate being able to identify that, but it means something has to, you know, maybe you can kind of get in there and intervene and help fix it, but what have you seen when a client, an example or two where a client maybe took over with their ego?
Yeah, I think we were chatting about this maybe about a month ago.
Yeah.
I had a client that was very insistent on an idea. And so I executed that idea 5-6 different ways. And I didn't agree with the idea. I didn't felt it was the best strategy, best path to go forward. So I presented like 6 other ideas. I typically don't present a lot of
that's
logos
a lot.
Either.
Yeah,
yeah, man.
It was a lot. Like I typically present 3, right? Yeah. So what I'm trying to do is get this to a point where, because he's a nice guy and he's trying to succeed, right? Mm-hmm. And so trying to get it to a point where, okay, I can hopefully maybe educate him a little bit. And I'll say that with some air quotes. But, you know, yeah. And we just couldn't get there. And so he kept coming back to me. He's like, well, I really want it to look like this. I'm like, you know what, man? I've given you 10 logos already. I spent the amount of time I can spend on it. Unless you're willing to pay me more money or you go with one of the suggestions that I have, I think we need to probably end this relationship.
Yeah.
Right? It's just not working.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, that's not an easy thing to do all the time.
But you saw the signs there too. And I think too, like, and you accommodated, right? And you came with a solution, like, here's 2 paths.
Right. Right.
And that's the best you can do. I think that's a smart way to do it. I think that passion or that precious client, sometimes they don't even realize it's a ego thing. They're so personally attached to maybe their personal ideas of what that logo should be. And they're not open to anything that you've probably presented. And I'm well aware we all 3 of us do a pretty good intense discovery thing. So like if they're not understanding it at that point, they're holding on to something, right?
Well, red flags right there, right? Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, again, circumstantial, but like if for some reason that starts to sway in that way, the first thing I do, which I didn't do before, the first thing I do is like, where did I go wrong in not communicating or setting expectations, right? Yep. Like that's the first thing to look at. And I think if your initial reaction is like, fuck this guy, well then you're going to come at it defensively and immediately totally. It's going to get torn. But like,
yeah,
if I know, like if that happens now and I know I've built this and I set expectations and like, we've talked about and agreed upon, and now it's starting to sway back the other way. If I can't get the client to like understand, yeah, then sometimes it's like you got to lay down, you got to push back. And that is definitely part of the relationship. It's like you got to be able to push each other back and forth with respect. But, you know, if a client's unwilling at a certain extent, it's like, well, then don't lose sleep over that. You know what I mean? Because there are great clients out there.
Yeah.
I'd say try everything you can.
You'll find another one.
Yeah, you will. And that's a scary thing, though, for a young designer. Like, I said yes to everything.
And they're like, there's no one else out there.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I let like anyone take advantage. And it was messy just because, you know, you don't know. Like I said, you don't know what success feels like unless you get other types. And like, you don't. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to measure these things. But yeah, I would say early on, like, if it becomes a pattern, if like, man, clients are just tough to work with, I'd say it's not clients, it's just you as the expert. You're not leading this relationship, mm-hmm. and you're not guiding. You are not setting the expectations. And they're coming at it reactionary. Like, the bottom line, and this was like a hard thing for me to learn, is like there's a huge double standard in this relationship between designer and client, right? Like,
yeah,
the clients all have to be irrational and reactive and emotional. We are not. Like, we have to absorb, and then we have to educate. And, like, you know, again, that doesn't mean we don't push back, but we should make sure it's coming from that, like, place of guidance. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of, if you can't either accept that or, like, understand, then I think you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah. Well, it comes back to that process, right?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to establish, you know, especially from as a young designer,
yeah.
you know, learning how to set up a process that can really work for you. And as you got into it, you know, identifying when that process isn't working and what you need to change to make that process better.
Yeah,
right.
Totally.
And, you know, totally. I think another thing too, in looking at, you know, when a logo doesn't succeed or something doesn't succeed, it's not coming at it from a personal perspective, but from a business perspective, like, why did this not succeed, or what can make it succeed from a business perspective, right? Because if you can educate your client from that business point of view, that this will really help identify you on the shelves or whatever it may be. If you can identify that, give that sort of feedback from their point of view of how to help their business succeed, they can see it in a different light.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's really well said. I think it really comes from a place like setting those expectations and checking your ego, taking yourself out of it. And putting yourself in the leading position, who is eager to guide someone. Like, whereas this is building relationships, it's also like you're teaching half the time. I don't expect clients to come mm-hmm. into this process and understand how it works. And I think it's weird that yeah. a lot of designers kind of have those unrealistic expectations for clients, where it's like, you should come into this knowing this is like, oh, you know, taboo to do this or scope creep or whatever. It's like, well, it's your job to educate them, because
yeah.
they might just be a local bakery. Like, why would they yeah. know that? And it's constant. Like, you have to start fresh, which is why I think retainers are great, because you put on mm-hmm. all that work and you set those expectations and you show them the process and you have it. I want to keep working for that. I don't want to have to do that with every client, because it is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And build the system. So the system works now, kind of like, I know some people be like, oh, I don't have the time, or like, it's so much, I'm in the trenches already. And it's like, well, great. But the next one.
Yeah.
Spend the time. I don't care what it takes to build the system, so you don't fall into those pitfalls. Right. And then like yeah. I think we both said, then you adapt and change it. My proposal, my scope, my discovery, my contract, it changes almost every time. You're right, because you've learned something from the past, yep, and you add a new section in there. And every time, like, I laugh too, because I'll have a student, you know, months later after graduation going, why didn't you talk about, you know, process and client relations, whatever? I'm like, I did. But every time I did, it's not a fun topic. And it's like I could see them lose interest. But where I know I get them is the minute I say this one time with a client, every ear perks up, and they're like, and then they have questions, and they understand the value of everything we're talking about here. Cause
right.
I think, Jay, you kind of were nailing it by saying that idea that, like, we do have to walk them through this. We do have to do a bit of training with this, because they're going to have that instinct already. And it's up to us, and hopefully our path and the way we're holding their hand through this is educating them. We have to teach them that. Have to teach them that.
There's a good quote. It's something like, we can't control how they feel, but we can control how they express it, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
we're setting, like, okay, this is how, and we set those guidelines just by doing it ourselves and throughout the entire process, throughout the onboarding and everything. You're setting the parameters and expectations of, like, here's how we communicate things. And it's my job to, like, educate you as the client on the why. And sure, and there's circumstance of, like, it might seem risky, you know, or if you think it's bad to tell a client, like, why they feel a certain way may be wrong, but that's also part of it.
Yeah.
If a client, like, has, I want them to express everything, but then it's my job to take that in and then explain maybe that's not the right way to think about that. And mm-hmm. I think you have to have that conversation a couple times starting off with every client. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as long as it's coming, you know, from a case of like, we're doing this, we have our set goals, we're determining goals and the customer's needs. As long as we're coming at like the explanation from a place of education as experts, then I think it leaves room for growth. And I think that develops the trust from the client to your expertise. Like mm-hmm. you can push back respectively, but again, it is our job to sort of control how things are expressed, not why or how yeah. they feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you even, right. Right.
You said absorb. And I think that's a great way to think about it. Don't be a
wall.
We're
a punching bag. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Like, don't be the wall, because then you'll get hurt if you put up a wall. But if you're soft to it and a little more like, bring it on, dude, like whatever you got, like,
yeah,
maybe that's another good thing too. Like, because the client's going to come back in a younger person or inexperienced designer's eye, they're attacking you. They're not attacking you. They're attacking the solution at hand or the concept, sure. you know, you're
looking putting
at.
Yourself into yeah. it again. It's like, you, they're not attacking yeah. you. They're attacking yeah. an idea that you built off of all the upfront work mm-hmm. of designing and setting your goals. Like, that idea that you gave them is the result of, you know, they're involved. It that work is, you know, a success of design isn't on you. The failure of your design isn't on you as the designer. It's like,
yeah,
if you're setting up the work, then it's through the process. And so the process can be on the designer, though. If like it fails yeah. because of the process, well, that's on you. There is that sort of, and just thinking about like the most triggered moment for me is always like that initial, it's feedback. Like, that's where mm-hmm. I get it, right? And it's always like that I still do. There's always the pit of the stomach like, I don't want to send this first concept. Like, I just want to keep it forever because it's great. And I don't need to know what anyone else thinks, which is so egotistical of me mm-hmm. to like, I don't care, you know. But I think that's where the meat of it all is, because the feedback is like, it's always the most emotional and usually not the most rational part of getting feedback is that first concept.
It's visceral. Yeah.
It really is. But, you know, the client has a right to be emotional and irrational. Like, that's if getting, you know, I guess, you know, if I'm getting direct feedback or difficult feedback, my first instinct is to get defensive. Even mm-hmm. now, it's like, it's always to get defensive.
Yeah.
And, but now, you know,
I have a stance I get into and people know, dude, it. Like, you get right? so defensive, right?
Yeah. And like, but maybe, and then, you know, now I can take a step back. Like, well, maybe I didn't take myself out enough, or maybe I didn't develop or set parameters. Like, my first, you know, instinct is to get defensive. But before I make a move on that, like, I try to take myself out a little bit and understand yeah. why I'm getting triggered in this moment. But, you know, I think if the client is being difficult in that first, you know, concept or that first initial feedback, like, we should be thinking, you know, what the client really needs is not like an argument, but also in this situation, they need guidance.
Yeah.
If they're coming at it with a personal preference instead of the customers, you know, it's our job to educate them. Again, mm-hmm. you know, we're the leaders in this situation. But it is that like that defensiveness from being yeah. vulnerable is really, I think, like,
it's you like know, when egos collide.
Finger on the trigger
now.
For me, man. Yeah, yeah.
this is the, yeah. the perfect storm, right? Like, they someone's put up a little front. You kind of get up with a defense.
Yes.
So it's about how have you softened those that moment to be more subjective. One thing I always love, have you guys ever had this where you send it off and you're waiting for either the conversation or even the call, because a lot of times too, like, they have the call to go through the concepts,
yeah,
not just throwing it out there blind because you're the salesperson. But I love it when you get that, like, hey man, I'm all set for the call in 10 minutes. I got one quick look at it. Everything's looking great. And you're like, like, thank you, God. Like, like, this is going to be a good call. And then you get those other ones. It's like, yeah, we need to talk. And you're like, oh my God, what did I do? But so
right. Or you get the silence.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is even worse to me, because, okay, like, I'm waiting.
You're right. Even the no communication at all
yeah.
is kind of like the worst. And then, oh, forget it. I'm in full ego mode.
Yeah, man. Which right. is why I love doing everything face to face if I can, or like, yeah, you know, video Skyping or something, even though like I don't expect them to give me a yes or no, but at least immediately after we're done presenting, I can say like, let's talk immediate reactions. Like, let's just get a feel. Like, I'm not looking for a yes or no. Obviously, take your time, show this to other people if you need to. But like, let's kind of get first impressions here, because
it locks them down.
That's sort of like setting a checkpoint of like, well, you know, initially we like this, this, and this. And it just, it makes that blow or like that sense of like, I don't know what's going on a little bit easier to deal with, having like a little idea of like a, like a, just a little grain of salt of where they are.
Well, and I think what you're getting at too, I mean, we have to remember that it's a collaborative process, right?
Yes. Yeah.
The whole thing is collaborative. You know, it's not just, I'm just doing this for you, here it is, I'm done. Right? Like, as much as we'd like it to be that sometimes, it's, you know, it's just not.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes it's super easy. You do something and people love it and you're done, you know? But, you know, most of the time it's not, you know? And it's just about this establishing the relationship and, like you said, absorbing, listening. Right? Like, really listening is so important.
I think that's the biggest tool we have in terms of building a relationship, right? Like, if you can sort of, it's so important to let the client express how they feel just freely. Like, do not, like, especially when we talk about the feedback, like, don't immediately interrupt, don't get defensive, like, give them all the time they need, and maybe just write down their points of view, show them that like you have that willingness to listen, that's your job. Ask them questions about like why they feel certain ways, and like give them opportunity to sort of process outwardly. Like, I want that relationship. I don't want to create a, cultivate some sort of thing where they feel like they have to go away if they want to, like, you know, talk, have, if they have issues or they want to, like, you know, I don't know, have, if they have a negative reaction, they want to talk it out. Like, I prefer them having that in front of me. I want them to feel comfortable. If I, you know, if the design isn't landing, like, it's not personal to me. Like, there's an issue that we need to fix together. It's collaborative. So, but I think that starts with like, you have to give them the opportunity to process outwardly. And then you can come back at with like a more collective approach. And like, I think it's easier to address immediate hangups and remind them that like who the project is ultimately for, and provide like every decision of the work and reason. But I guess ultimately it's really just relationship. It always comes back to relationship. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
I think your listening topic there is, again, another good segue, because we want to end this with some positive stuff. We want to talk about how maybe we have helped balance that ego in ourselves, maybe with clients and others. And maybe that step one is this idea of the listening. And I do know, like, I remember when this, reading a book all about this topic, and not specifically in our industry, but just ego amongst you and people in your lives. And you, the one thing you can do, number one, is the listening part. Like, especially if it's someone else, or if it's you too. I think a lot of times what a person that has a full blown ego and it's all about me, isn't listening, right? Like, they're in a way around it is to just open your ears, close your mouth, listen to what someone's saying, right? Particularly like you were saying with the client, let them have that brain dump, because the trust, then there's a trust factor that I feel like could help tame it down a little bit. And I've seen it in myself too, right? I know when it triggers, and as soon as it does, I'm like, just stop and listen to who you're talking to, have that conversation, you know? What other ways do you guys feel you can truly control it, or in yourselves, or bring it up with others and maybe help situate and balance it better?
I think you got into it. Again, it's the listening, like sitting there, like you said, when someone just is talking and they're going for 15 minutes about what their business is, what they do, et cetera, just absorb it.
Yeah.
Take it in, maybe take some notes, you know, and really try to figure out where they're coming from. Right? Because when you can figure out where they're coming from, you can then apply that to your designs and to their sort of business goals. And, you know, that comes with experience of dealing with people. Right? At the end of the day, right? You know? Because, you know, you learn different people's personalities, how they go about things, and, you know, experience, you know? So especially young designers, get out there.
Would you guys
put yourself out there and talk.
Would you guys consider yourselves introverts or extroverts?
That's a good question, man. I'm a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love to be in front of my computer designing. You know, I think about it nonstop, right? But at the same time, I do like being out there and talking to people, and you know,
especially when it comes to things that are passionate. It changes in time.
It does. It,
you know, and I heard someone put it a great way. They said they were, and this is maybe even common in a lot of them. A typical introvert is really an introvert, but they're an extrovert in their you push the opposite, right? So and then an extrovert is really an introvert, like it was this way but with introvert tendencies or something like that. And I thought that was interesting because I think I've never been like the risk taker or the loud one or the one like that was the true extrovert, but I think people would describe me as one. And that's so I always wonder too, like, does that have a lot to do with like what you were saying with being out there and talking and communicating and listening? Because maybe this goes hand in hand with how our ego is balanced.
Yeah, because I think designers kind of have to be both in that, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have to be introverted enough to feel good being by yourself in your office working for hours on end with no one around. But also you have to be extroverted enough to like feel comfortable talking and jumping on the phone to someone you never talked to. Like you do that all day long, right? Like you have to be comfortable building relationships with people you don't know, and you have to be comfortable like showing, you know, a vulnerable side of yourself to these strangers. Mm-hmm. Like you have to have both. It's like a weird dichotomy, like of intro extro as a designer. I'm not sure if you can kind of get away with it if you're truly one way or another, right? Like you have to appreciate both sides.
And you don't want to be 100% either way. There's opposite, you know, you don't want to be at the extreme ends of those things.
Yeah.
I like to be somewhere in that zone where I'm favoring one, but you can maybe in the situation you're in, you can monitor that. You can shift the lever. I'm like, let me quiet down. Let me shout out. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Well, and too, I mean, it's okay to be a little uncomfortable.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best, man.
Right. Because when you're uncomfortable, you're sort of more aware of what's going on around you. Right. Like, you can start to sense things a little bit more. And so that I think is important, right? You know, being nervous before an interview or being nervous before you meet somebody or sending your work off for the first time, that's all part of that uncomfortableness that, you know, really just moves us along.
Yeah, that's where like you let that like positive, healthy ego come in a little bit. In those circumstances, that's where I do. Mm-hmm. It's like, I got this. Like, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to let it in circumstances where I do feel vulnerable or uncomfortable, just enough to give me like some self-confidence.
Right.
Or is it letting letting go a little bit too? Because I think someone had a great quote where saying like, you know, if you're not the least bit nervous in hitting send, publish or post, you know, then you're doing it wrong. Like, and why not? Like, because when you see people that are maybe, oh, I don't want to share my stuff or I'm not feeling I'm adequate enough in a certain way to put it out there. But that nervousness turn that as a sign that's a green light, not a red light.
Yeah, you still have a passion.
Yes.
I think you can take yourself out of it, but you should never try to remove like your passion behind something.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I
think it's just don't define yourself behind something is really that sort of idea.
Yeah.
Like, this design isn't defined by you and your experience and your level of capability. It's something different. I think, you know, when we talk about like ways to balance, I think a big one for me is design isn't necessarily art. Like that's it, art, you know what I mean? Like that, I think we're so precious with our designs so often because they're personal, but like art serves the artist. It's a form of self-expression and it's like tremendously personal. Whereas design serves the client and the customer, and it's solving a business problem. Like, you know, being inspiring and personal and the thing of beauty is secondary to that. So I think trying to recognize, like, you know, we're not, it sounds bad. Like, we're not artists. Yes, we are. I get it. But, like, design isn't really art. And in my opinion, like, otherwise we're, you know, if you take the client and the customer and all that away, well, then, yeah, like, you're creating art, sure. But our goals, we have other things that come first before something, just to make something beautifully impactful, you know, for the sake of
I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it always feels like, you know, and I get pushback from certain designers too, but like, why is it, you know, I think art can be design, but design can't be only art. You know what I mean? Like there's that weird like sort of split where designer is a designer and artist is an artist.
Yeah.
Yes, there's overlap, but there's a reason why they're both different. There's a reason why we define them differently. Mm-hmm. And I think
Is. Like, yeah. I don't consider myself an artist, to be honest. Like I don't.
Yeah.
I'm a designer. Like I try to be a business person.
Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. Like in this line of work, 100%. Like I think it's mostly business.
Like I'm solving problems, right? Yes. Like I'm not making a painting I'm going to stick on a wall, right?
Yeah. That, it
satisfies why I felt weird as a little kid, right? Like I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but that's the thing though. And that's that line of personal, right?
Yes.
100%. My very first slide in my very first class every year is you are a commercial artist, not a fine artist. Because it's if you add commerce, and we talked the other day, what we're doing is persuading people. We're trying to strike an emotional chord with them to either purchase, buy, join, whatever it is. And you're right. It is that becomes there's the business side of it. And the more you focus there, the less you focus with, you know, your quality of as being an artist. Mm. Like, right. Like I've always tried to like, let me just do an abstract painting or something. And I'm like, it's just to get it out of your system. But like,
oh yeah. Like, or if I'm so in the mood to be an artist at that moment, I'll be an artist. Yeah. If I'm creating something for me that is self-reflective of me and it's a form of my self-expression, then yes, I'm creating art and I am an artist. But like, when we're talking about freelance design, like I'm not doing that. Like my mindset is completely different. I'm not just painting something that feels good. Like, and also sometimes the best designs aren't recognizable. Like sometimes the role of design is to take a back seat, you know, and like it's not to be noticed. You look at like product designer, like UX, UI, like sometimes design is to be hidden. Like good design
you're right.
Is, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's a big one.
how do you guys stop identifying with your ego? Like how do you say like, okay, that's not me. What's me is this. You know, like how do you remove ego from identifying yourselves? What things do you say to yourself to help you? I'm good and I'm worth it. But you know what I mean?
I don't know.
When Jordan and I were kind of doing a little background information on this and like kind of what should we talk about? What can we talk about? Like one of the big things we kept seeing was stop identifying with your ego. That's not who you are. So like if you uncover your real inner purpose in this position as what we do, can't that take the personality, the personal side of it out? And how can we do that? So what do you identify with? I, like as a starter, I can say like, I can identify with the fact that like, I love mentoring. I love teaching. I love sharing. I love helping who's next in line. I love the client side of it. I love the problem solving side of it. Like all these things we can also say we do rather than say designer first. Or artist, you know? So what tools can help you identify with you, not your ego?
Well, you know, I think it's just getting to understanding your strengths, like you just got into right there, right? And understanding your weaknesses too, right?
Oh, 100%, like,
I'm not the best illustrator, so if I need something that's illustrated, I'll contact one of my designer friends that illustrate really well, and I'll bring them in, right? You know, you do what you need to do, right, to satisfy the client, right?
Yep.
And so I always try to just remember to say, just keep yourself separated.
I can't do everything.
I can't do everything. You can't. You literally can't. And even doing like, you got into all the admin stuff, all that other stuff, it takes so much time.
Yeah.
And you can't do it all, right? Like, it's just, so, you know, I try to just keep it separated, you know, as best I can. And, you know, you have clients that will drag you in and your ego gets sort of drug in that way, but you still have to just remember, take a step back. Always take a step back.
Yeah. Jordan?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's sort of this like collective of everything we've sort of discussed. Like, how do I keep that into check? And it's really like, it's work. It's not like I just have it figured out. Like I struggle and fumble and get pissed at things and defensive and irrational all the time, every day, right? Like it's just, it's something but the difference is like, I'm trying to work at it, where I'm trying to pick apart and find the situations where I feel most triggered. And I'm trying to change my process to address these feelings and mm-hmm. try to give myself like that sort of reasoning and rationale behind and give the client the benefit of the doubt always and like build relationships first and then everything else comes second. And I just think like it's really, it takes self-reflectiveness to an extent of understanding what is actually happening, taking yourself out of your own body and finding those emotions. I don't try to necessarily cut them out because I think it's impossible. And I don't think you can ever take yourself out of your work fully. Like it's always going to be personal, but if I can identify those situations and sort of dissect like, okay, I'm going to work on this. This is where I'm feeling most triggered. Like I said, when that initial feedback from client, when I send the first design, that's when I'm most vulnerable. That's when I'm most defensive. And so it was me trying to figure out my process of like, if I'm getting most defensive here, let's figure out a way where I'm not, right? Like maybe, or maybe it's like, I set the process up different, or before I show them, I set expectations of what we're going to see. It's like I'm developing my pitch deck and like I'm working on my process because there's situations where I'm feeling most triggered. Uh-huh. And so I think it's just work, man. It's therapeutic for yourself. It's like self-therapy. It's like you got to do the work. And I don't think it ever really ends. I don't think there's like any 5 tips to check your ego. Like I think it's situational and it's being able to look at yourself through a different lens, you know.
Yeah,
completely agree, you know. And to get into that too, remember, I mean, we're designers and we think about design all the time, but it doesn't define us entirely who we are. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I coach my kids' baseball team.
Yeah,
I like to play video games, you know, on and on and on, right?
Yes.
Like design is something that maybe I do 12 hours a day, but that's just part mm-hmm. of it.
Yeah,
right? It is not everything.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the great quotes I saw when we were looking this up it just summed it up so well. It said the primary cause of unhappiness is never the situation, but your thoughts about it. You know?
Right.
And, yeah.
And again, it's all these things you were saying, like almost those checkpoints of when something, so if an unhappy thought comes into play, it might not be the actual situation at hand, but it's how you're thinking about it, how you're taking it on. And man, I don't know how a young kid could do it in this, getting into the industry with so much around them telling them they got to be this, you know.
Well, that's
why we're hoping this is
shedding a light.
Yeah, well, the whole idea of the podcast was to try not to do that and really just like have perspectives, because I think that's the only real way. Like it's a red flag if someone's like, here's what to do, because I don't know. I think it's situational. I think everyone's process and feeling is different. I don't think you can just identify things into a list. I think you can only really dig in when people share their experience personally. And if you connect on certain things, then maybe you try to pull those out. But there's no blanket rule with this kind of stuff at all. It's so mm-hmm. subjective. It's so situational.
Yeah.
Completely agree.
Man, that was a fantastic conversation, guys. That was really good. Jay, I'm so glad we were able to get you on this, and your contributions to this is great. I think we are so similar, but then we also have those different things, and I think that's another way to kind of not define yourselves too similar to anybody else, right? Find those things that are individual to you, that make you shine. Those are the things I think make people come to life,
100%,
yeah. Right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And that personality, you know, just for the young designers, that's what helps get you jobs too. You
yes.
know, it's really trying to just understand who you are and how you feel about yourself.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. You know. And that's innate in what we look for in other people. And maybe we might not know that as clear as you just said it, but it's so true. It's so true.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, again, tell them where they can find you. Give yourself another plug. So everyone can take a look and see, connect with you.
All good. If you want to find me on Instagram, I'm at Live Design Co. Otherwise, jmasterdesign.com. You can find me on Dribbble if you just type in my name, Jay Master. Sort of all over the social media places as we have to be.
Yeah.
So if you want to see my stuff, go for it. Take a look.
Nice. Nice, man. I'm sure I would assume most of our friends are already following you. If you aren't, get on it. Follow Jay. You put some great work out there. You're nonstop, dude. Both of you guys, like, just animals, man. I always, and
if you don't follow me, I don't care. It doesn't matter.
I'm trying to push those numbers. No, I'm just kidding, dude.
Yeah, feed the ego.
That's the way to look at it. That's the right way. So definitely, I hope you guys enjoyed this one. Definitely share it with folks. Like I just shared a great conversation we had, our conversation with Matt Dawson, to a buddy of mine on Twitter the other day. And it's just like, these are those things. I know a lot of you need to hear this kind of stuff. We need to hear it as well. It's all got to be in check all the time. So share this with anybody you think it would be helpful with. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, guys.
All right. Appreciate you guys.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Jay.
See you guys.